Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. Wherever you are, good night. If you're in a different part of the world, you are listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at Israel News Talk Radio. And I always like to be educated when I am doing my shows. I like to come out of it with more learning, understanding. And I think that that will happen today on this show, especially because we're going to be talking about foreign powers, Middle East muddling, the United Nations, Russia, Iran, and most importantly, you. How does this all affect us? We're going to be speaking with a PhD Middle East expert and scholar, and he's going to be talking to us about what all of these new maneuverings and interests are and how they're going to affect us, I should say. So you'll want to tune in, and you'll also want to call in with any questions or comments you may have. I'm very excited because this guest that we're going to be having on is a scholar, not only in political science, but in Islamic and Middle Eastern studies. And he's not Islamic. He's not a Muslim. His work focuses on Islamic extremism in Europe, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Shiism, and on international security. So this affects you and I because we've seen that terror, though it may emanate from the Middle East, has spread its tentacles around the world and affects you. It affects you when you get onto an airplane, when you travel, what you can take with you, what you can't take with you. This is just a little inconvenience, but it affects us all on a much larger level. So tune in. Feel free to call in. Join me in the chat room. I want to say hi to everybody who's listening in from all over the world as well. Israel, United States, Australia, Belgium, Canada, etc. It is going to be a very, very good show. Invite your friends and join me in the chat room. It's the orange button on our website. We'll be right back.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Right, so we're back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we're going to be talking today about foreign powers and Middle East muddling, the United Nations, Russia, Iran, and how it affects you. Our guest is Dr. Christoph Marcinkowski. He is an award-winning political analyst and consultant in counterterrorism. He's a scholar in Islamic and Middle Eastern studies, and his work focus is on Islamic extremism in Europe, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Shiism, and on international security. So I want to welcome to the show Dr. Christoph Marcinkowski.
Shalom and good morning, Tamar. And I think Boker Tov, right?
Is that correct? Yes, that is correct. Boker Tov, right. So... Okay. Let me put it this way. The Middle East is, again, reforming itself into different power structures after the Arab Spring. There's conflicts, there's interests. Iran is meddling in several countries through its terror proxies. Russia is involved with its naval interests. The United Nations now is sending more forces here and settling on Israel's northern border with Syria. Egypt and Jordan have governments that are barely holding on to power. And inside Iran, the population is uprising, though you don't see it in your headlines. Their currency, the rial, is now approximately 100,000 rials to one American U.S. dollar. Your economy is collapsing. So what do you make of all of this, and where would you like to start?
Wow, where would I like to start? I think with the coming of Russia, so to say, I mean, with the so-called victory of the Assad regime, which is basically we can take for granted with the help of Russia, the situation has been totally changed than before. For example, before there was always a Russian presence of advisors and, of course, the military bases there on the Mediterranean. But now we have Russian troops right at the border of the Golan Heights, which for the in the short run might be quite useful to rein in the again another issue now, rein in the Daesh, the IS people there. But in the long run, actually, Russia might feel inclined to become kind of kingmaker in the region. So in the region becomes and the major players have changed there, and it is hoped that the United States will take a more active role. And in the moment within the Syrian context, that is difficult to do now. But with regard to Iran, I think we can expect a worsening kind of situation, instable. Of course, the Straits of Hormuz with the oil exports and so on, there have been some threats from Iran recently. So, and I would also, if I would be asked me to advise, I would say that it would be a big problem or big maybe mistake from my point of view for the U.S., to withdraw from the Eastern Euphrates region, that is to say the Syrian Kurdish region. It is very important that America has a foot there, and it's very important also not to leave, as so many times in the past, the Kurdish people. The Kurds have played a very important role in establishing some sort of stability there. And they are certainly not inclined towards Islamism. They want to have a better life for their people. And so it would be very sad, actually, to leave basically allies there. And I'm hoping that Israel will also take a more active role in maybe one day when the time is ripe, to help the Kurdish people also there in that region, maybe within, statehood, we cannot talk. So it's quite issues here, but the key change I would say is that Russia is in the game, number one in Syria, and followed of course by Hezbollah and also Iraqi and other terrorist groups there, even from as far as away as Afghanistan, Pakistan. There are people there in Syria. So it's with the umbrella of Russia on would be very difficult for Israel to go after these people there in Syria. I mean, in the short run, it might help the people in Golan maybe to rein in these terrorists there with supposedly the help of Russia. But in the long run, I think Russia will be in a position of kind of blackmailing.
Okay, let's hold it there for a moment, because there's such a wide field to talk about. Iran, the Kurds, the terror, etc., etc. We actually do have a caller right now, and so I want to take the phone call from our caller. What's your first name and where are you calling in from?
Shoshana from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Tamar.
Hi, Shoshana. How are you? Yes.
Hi, Shoshana.
My question is, as an American, what role do you think America should be taking? You said something about America doing more. What do you mean?
The shifting of the embassy to Jerusalem was the right thing to do. No? That was really a sign. That's it. But with regard to Iran, I think it's the right position. It was the kind of a position President Trump took also with North Korea. First, of course, to show them there's a red line, which this time, contrary to Obama, will not be crossed. On the other hand, also to open the doors for a personal meeting, for negotiations and so on. And that is also what President Trump, I think he was quite serious when he offered the Iranian leadership a meeting and to let's talk about it. Huh? But we see that Iran, for example, the regime is this time really, really in danger. Because if we look at the 78-79 revolution, who started the revolution? That had been the bazaar people, the merchant and traders in the big cities. And now again, we see these people, which are actually the pillars of the regime, we see them revolting. We see cities like Isfahan and Western Iran, and now actually the whole country in turmoil. People are bravely demonstrating there. And I hope that by bringing down or to influencing the leadership, that the economy is really going down and so on and so forth. And, that will really hopefully bring quick results. And I would like to add one final thing is the Iranian people and Israel, and they enjoyed so much. They have actually, the Iranian people, they function different than the Arabs. They don't have this hatred towards Israel. We have 70s and 60s so close relations between and I have can even go beyond hundreds of years. It would be a very dramatic and very sad that if the Iranian regime would drive the country into a war with the Western world, including Israel.
Okay, so basically you're saying that Trump is doing the right thing by moving the embassy to Jerusalem, supporting Israel, having Israel's back in many ways, and also with his policy with Iran, that he's weakening them not just politically, but economically, which is getting their own people to rise up against the government, and this is a good thing as well. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, in the short run, of course, sanctioning and so, but it worked. It had it's shown it worked, and I think the Europeans are totally on the wrong side of history. I would say even I would call the European policy, the EU policy vis-a-vis Iran, I would call it appeasement, no, and with a very clear link to what happened in the early 1930s. No? Especially German companies are very active. I don't dare even to say it. The chemical industry, they build up actually many things. The nuclear buildup of Iran actually wouldn't be possible without help from certain German companies. No?
Germany and other European countries. So let me ask you this, because we only have another minute till we get to the end of this segment, is that would you say that they're appeasing Iran because they like Iran? Countries don't have friends, they only have interests. So is it that they're doing business with Iran and they don't want to lose those business contracts?
Business, yes, of course, of course. Business is the main thing for the Europeans. Otherwise, they're just too weak. Especially a country like Germany, they would never.
And just, what does that have to do with all the influx of Muslims and other peoples pouring into Europe?
Wow! If you only have 1 minute, that would be explode your thing. But it has to do with a kind of the liberal movement here in the negative sense, the liberal movement here in Germany, and total shift of the political party system here is one thing, and then we could also move to some interest from countries like Qatar, You know, there's not without reason that Saudi Arabia and others are isolating that country. It means they are playing an Islamizing role in the region, but also in the wider region, Europe. And
why don't you answer this one question with a yes or a no? Do you see a future for Europe?
With European Union? No.
No.
In that sense, we have it today, no.
We're going to leave it right there for now. We're going to be back after the break. We are talking about Iran, Russia, the changing aspects here, what's happening in the Middle East with different interests and the conflicts going on. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to call into the show. Our numbers are on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. We'll be right back after the break.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
We're back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we are talking about the foreign powers and Middle East meddling and muddling. The United Nations is here on our border here in Israel and between Israel and Syria. Iran is meddling in Israeli security, politics, etc. through its terror proxies, the Hezbollah, the Hamas, etc. And how does all of the terrorism that they're sponsoring and their interests affect you? Our guest is Dr. Krzysztof Marcinkowski. He's an award-winning political analyst and consultant in counterterrorism. Again, he's a scholar in Islamic and Middle Eastern studies, and his work focuses on Islamic extremism in Europe. And we are going to be asking him now how this affects us. And what I would like to present to you is, again, and I've discussed this on a show in the recent past, that the rial, which is the Iranian currency, is now trading, I believe, in the black market for 100,000 rials to one American U.S. dollar. I would think people who have been saving up their life savings, and now their money is worth nothing. And this is even before the sanctions kick in.
Right.
I would think this would be a reason to go to war. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, the situation, I would say, the regime is basing his very existence on crude power. For example, Iran is basically ruled now by old people. These are people who are went through that Iran-Iraq war, and they have this kind of narrative and so on. The young people, they want change. However, the whole regime is comparable with that one with Maduro in Venezuela, or maybe also with some kind of fascistoid regimes we had in Europe before. It is the whole country is under the control of, is corrupt. It's under the control of these Basiji people. This is kind of stormtroopers. No, we had that in the 1930s in Germany. You can really compare that, actually. And so it is kind of fascistoid system there. It's a kind of like a kraken. You know, this the tentacles. The government has it's saying everywhere. So it's the reign of terror. Otherwise, and it makes actually the rising of the people much more brave, much more admirable. So the funny thing is actually in inverted commas is Rouhani, the president, actually a so-called moderate, he came to power with an agenda of being a reformer, of improving the economy and also the relations with foreign powers, and nothing actually and he's himself a cleric, So the people don't want that anymore. They have seen that the last couple or 3 or 4 years, and it doesn't work. You know? And they really want the change. You know? They want a democratic state. And that is, I think, now a situation we had never before, that people are really fed up, actually. And
I understand that the Iranians, many of them, are sick and tired of their money being poured out of the country to fund the Hezbollah, the Hamas. Yes. They're sick of it. They want better lives themselves. Do you think that they're going to succeed? I mean, we heard about the People's Revolution in the early 2000s, and they were begging America for help. And if not for help, at least don't stop us and support this Islamic regime government. And they got no help from Bush. They got no help from Obama. And do you think that they're going to succeed this time?
We will see. But I think this time is a very crucial situation. Why? I mentioned it before. Even former supporters of the regime, the Bazaari class, the big traders of the cities, the merchants, they don't support apparently the regime anymore. They had been the pillars of the establishment of the regime against the Shah time. So if these people are revolting also, and big cities like Isfahan, which is a big traditional Bazaari class, city, and then also you mentioned it very well, Tamar, is in this demonstration, people shouting us also take our troops out, and so to say, of all these foreign adventures, and care for their own people. This we hadn't heard before on the street. I think it's very interesting. But one thing I would add, actually, because the opposition in Iran is like in Syria before, splittered up and all that. There's one group they call the Mujahideen al-Khalq people. These people are actually also quite dangerous. If we replace one dictatorship with these people, I think would be also quite, But President Trump's policy, I think, should be supported here. And that is the only one who, who keeps his word, no? And before we have seen...
Let me ask you this, because Trump is a real doer. You can agree with him, you can disagree with him. I know we have listeners on both sides, but he's getting things done. And so I want to ask you, if you were trying to see a regime change, let's say you're the American president or whatever, and you... you want to see this government overthrown, you want to see democracy coming in and a more Western-friendly society, which people don't remember, but in the 1970s, Iran was pretty friendly to Israel. There were business dealings between the two countries. Yeah. They were much more Western-friendly. The women weren't going in the hijabs. They weren't covering themselves. There was much more Western. Wouldn't you want to support an opposition and have even almost build, I won't say a shadow government, but have something there to be ready to come in when and when this regime is toppled?
Yes, I think it's very important now to bring at least a lot of people, opposition group, together, but not this should be people who have a if you look at people like these Mujahideen al-Khalq people, they are also extremists. You know, they are basically some years ago had been still on the list of the terrorists by European Union and United States. So to bring outside, kind of shadow cabinet, I think that's a good thing, actually, to bring a lot of people together in a, let's say, in a nice European city, and then to discuss and so on. And the problem was when Bush decided to go to Iraq. And then he went first in and then tried to build this kind of people. This is a big mistake. No, we should see that Iran is a huge country with 80 million people. And if something like that happened, like in Syria or Iraq before, that people killing each other, that should be avoided. It should be first. Should be a long-term strategy.
You have to give people an alternative, because people can say, well, yes, we don't want the Islamic regime here, but what else do we have? We don't have anything else. Okay, let's go to a caller. We have hi, caller. What is your first name and where are you calling in from?
Yeah, this is Larry. I'm calling you from Kansas.
Hi, Larry, from the occupied territories of Kansas. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I never could figure out who's occupying it, though, besides myself. But anyway, the younger people that are really in the streets in Tehran are not old enough to remember it back when the Shah was in power. But I'm sure their parents have told them about that. And they have the advantage. It's not really a new revolution to them. they know what they want, and they've at least had a taste of really Western democracy through their parents and, you know, that. And another question I have is the public press still open and any kind of objective, or is it totally controlled by the Islamic
fanatics? Good question. Good question.
Well, of course, we have this media and so on, the new media, but the problem is nobody listens anymore what is happening in the state-controlled media and TV and so on. But the problem, as I mentioned before, is to go the last step, really, to not just to street demonstration, but let's say to have a kind of civil war. People are following very closely what happened in Syria, what happened with these countries, no? And that is, I think, people are you know, a bit afraid to go this way. But this time, I think people see there is no future for this regime anymore, and the money is wasted outside the country.
But he's asking, is there a free press there, or are these is opposition voice silenced?
The opposition is voice silenced, and that's why people take their
radio,
on the radio and internet and so on and so forth. But Iranians are different from, we are quite well informed what is going outside the country. Sometimes people are traveling, going to Dubai and, you know, have business links and getting their news from there and have relations to, you know, the people overseas, they're traveling. Iranians are not restricted to travel overseas.
Well, they're pretty much Western. They're inclined to be Western anyway, aren't they?
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. Thank you.
No, he's asking if the Iranian people aren't more inclined to be Western. That's what he's asking you.
Yes, of course, because this is a nation, you know, they have their own cultural, you know, when Islam came somewhere in the Arab world, they erased what happened before in the Arab world. In the case of Iran, they have a strong national consciousness in a positive sense, no? And they have the feeling that they are... you know, they contributed much to the world, national pride actually there, and they as you mentioned, some of the older ones, they remember well the time of the Shah time, and you know, when people can dress as they want, you know, they don't cover women.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to break it down in a religious way, though, because if you're a religious Muslim, you're not going to have Western values. It doesn't matter if you're young or you're old. But we have to stop and take a break for now. Larry, thank you for your call. Really appreciate you calling in. If anybody else wants to call in, we have one more segment coming up, and you can call in with your comments or questions. Again, we're speaking about the changes here in the Middle East, what we're seeing. I'll try to focus on the coming segment more about the foreign troops on Israel's border with Syria, with the UN peacekeepers, and what does that mean for Israel? We'll be right back, everybody. And again, you can call in with any comments or questions in the next segment.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
All right, we're back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio, and we're talking about the changes that we're seeing here in the Middle East, the foreign powers, the meddling, the muddling of the United Nations, Iran, and how it affects you, how it affects us. And my guest is Dr. Christoph Marcinkowski. He's an award-winning political analyst and consultant in counterterrorism, and he's a scholar in Islamic and Middle Eastern studies. And so I wanted to use this last segment to ask you about Israel's border now with Syria. We have Russian troops there. We have Russian interests there. We've got Syria there, of course. We've got Iranian troops and interests in Syria that are encroaching on Israel. And talking about that, the Russians are saying, well, in order to help keep the Iranians away from Israel, which was what Israel wants, we're bringing in UN peacekeepers. And we know that the United Nations peacekeepers are not neutral. They've always been against Israel, either covering up for the other side, not policing the borders like they should, letting the terrorists take advantage. And then they're in the way when we try to defend ourselves. We have to worry that we don't kill any UNIFIL or UN troops. So this is a very negative thing, in my opinion. But I'd like to ask you, the award-winning political analyst, what you think about all of this.
Well, I think Israel must stay strong here. And it's unacceptable that here United Nations, which is basically has shown its stance against Israel recently and through all most of its existence. But it's a very cunning move by Russia, actually, because Russia, as I mentioned, wants to play the kingmaker here, and it can also endanger the situation of the Golan Heights, which is an integral part of Israel, and that should not be accepted, actually, that any increase of role of United Nations there. I mean,
okay, so let me ask you this question, Russia, because I'm thinking, if I were Russia, I would say that, well, if you want Iran to be kept away from you, we need to bring more troops in. And I would bring my troops in. I would bring in more troops and not the UN. So why are they not telling Israel, well, you know, we have to import more of our troops here in order to keep Iran away? Why are they bringing in the UN?
That's a very cunning move, because, you know, if we open a TV set and we see suddenly, which hopefully never happened, but let's say some exchange of fire between, you know, Israel and the so-called neutral United Nations, that looks very bad for the image of Israel there. So Russia always has tries to move from the second row, actually. It was in the Crimea, the same thing. You know, actually, the involvement of Russia in the border there, actually, it's a God-given gift to Putin, actually, because he was leaking blood, actually, because through all these years of weakness of Obama and so on, and now it is very important for Israel and the United States also for our president to be tough there and to say no 80 kilometers distance of Hezbollah from the Israeli border is not enough. And all the other foreign fighters there, they have to get out of the country of Syria. And, you know, that also will encroach on the activity range for Israel to act. Because the only outlet is now Lebanon, okay? If there something goes wrong, Israel can still handle. But let's say if there's a problem with the Hezbollah in Golan, I think the Russians can intervene, and you know it's they can play a kingmaker role. That's just actually also not acceptable. And that is in the long run the negative outcome of the Syrian civil war. In the short run, it might be nice in inverted commas that they rein in the IS people and so on, but they can just open close the door, open close, and do you know, that's a very dangerous situation there, actually. And,
do you have information on exactly which countries in the United Nations are patrolling the border between Israel and Syria?
Well, if these countries, I think it will go in that direction, that they will choose countries like Finland or Fiji Islands or something, which is basically don't make problems, no, for Russia, no? So which are easy to conform, but that is how it was in the past, and I think why it should be different, why there should be, let's say, a major European power involved there, that is impossible.
Okay, so basically you're saying also that you believe it's not a very good thing for the UN troops to be in our borders, and I agree. So we're coming towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to kind of like bring everything that we've discussed and tried to tackle today together. So if you had to sum up the future of Iran and its influence in the region and what's going to happen with its internal politics, what do you see happening?
Well, I think this time is a very promising situation, actually, that I think a large majority of segment society actually on the move in Iran and so on and so forth. What I see actually is negatively is that the regime will not easily, you know, these are old hardened, some of them fought in the Iraq war, Iran-Iraq war in the 80s, the old generals of the Revolutionary Guards and so on. So these are the dangerous people, you know? But otherwise the mood is clear. You know? So finally, it would be good to find a good place to move the to unite the opposition groups and so on and outside the country, and then we will see. And the people in Iran have to know. They have to know that now something on the move, that now actually opposition groups are meeting together, so something like Syria will not occur in the case of a big country like Iran with 80 million people.
Very, very interesting. And so basically you're looking at the good developments here, that these things that are happening with the sanctions, with the rial being so low, that this is ripe for a government change, something that's more Western democracy friendly, and you see something good happening there rather than Iran. Because it could go the other way. It could be that the Iranian government is not going to go down, and they would rather blow up the world and take the world with them than give up their power.
To blow up the world, I think that is they are not in the position to do it. But I think what I hope what not happens is like in Syria, kind of, you know, that they are still fighting with hundreds of thousands of people dead, and then the regime is still in power with the Russian thing. It should be maybe on a higher level between the U.S. and Russia, and so Russia also must be given something. I mean, they have Iran and Russia are neighbors, so that should be discussed on some channels. You know, but
do you think that the regime that's there is going to agree to let itself be taken down, even if it's done peacefully?
Trump is a doer. I mean, you mentioned it quite well. I mean, time will tell. You know, in the North Korea, there had been something on the move, although we heard now different stories with the rearmament and so on. So, but I trust in him, actually, you know, that we will see, you know. But the mood of the people of Iran are now united, actually. That's like never before. And
united against its government, you mean?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that there's many different populations in Iran. It's not just Persians. They've got Balochs there and all sorts of other ethnicities there. And so they're not very happy. So we'll see what's going to happen there. Where can people follow you? Do you write articles? Are they published anywhere? Where can people follow you?
Well, I have actually. I'm basically writing for companies, internal things, inviting their. I mean, and advising their staff, but which is now basically coming to a halt because of the sanctions. But I wrote books actually. One of them is called Shiite Identities, which can be on Amazon. You can get it also, and several other books I have. So you have a lot of links there. You can follow up there on my other writings and articles.
It's so people can look you up on Amazon.
Yes, you can do that. Yes,
you've written like a dozen books on the Middle East and what's happening here, correct?
Yeah, but these three more important ones is one is called The Islamic World and the West, which is on Amazon, and the other one is Shiite Identities, which is a collection of articles which shows that Shiism is much more active, not only in the region, goes to until Southeast Asia, for example, where they're politically very active, which people never suspect. Actually, the Iranians are very active through their embassies there, and promoting the conversion, so to say, from Sunni to Shia Islam, let's say, among Muslims, even in the Indian Ocean region. So it's quite a big project for them. You know?
Very interesting. All right, so they can look for you on Amazon. You've written several books, and you are an expert in these things. I just want to tell people that I wish I had more time, but our guest, Krzysztof Marcinkowski, is also an independent scholar and consultant, and he's, of course, currently based in Germany. You could probably tell by his accent. But he's also an external research associate for the Bahrain Institute of Banking and Finance, focusing on ethics in Islamic banking and finance. You know, we could probably just do a show on Islamic banking and finance. And what does that mean? How does religion go into their financing and direct their banking? That would be quite interesting.
I want to add something, actually, because...
You have 60 seconds.
Okay. I will be in Israel, by the way, in September from 10th to 24th, because I have another project, actually. I'm doing my Giur. I'm half Polish, half German, by the way. So I'm discovering certain things. I'm doing my Giur.
When you say Giur, you're converting to Judaism.
Yes, I'm doing that here. And was not so easy to find a teacher here and all that, but I have quite a lot of reading to do, a lot of things to do. It's a long story, but it'll be another time.
Maybe yes, we'll have to do a show on why someone who is an Islamic scholar is converting to Judaism in Germany, in Germany yet.
I'm Polish, I'm German, and I have no this. It's a long story, actually. There are also some good people here. I mean, it's not all rubbish.
I'm sure it is. That's going to have to be your next book.
Okay.
That's going to have to be your next book. That would make an interesting story. Again, I want to thank Dr. Krzysztof Marcinkowski for coming on the show, giving us an interesting look on what's happening here and the changes happening. Thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us.
Thank you, Thomas. And thank you for sharing. Thanks.
And if you have any comments or questions, feel free to post them on the homepage or on the page where the show is podcasted. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at Israel News Talk Radio, and you can always write me with your comments at Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thanks for being with us.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.